Sunshine by Hare Krishna Kaul. Arriving in Delhi, Poshi Kaj found herself in a totally new world. She heaved a deep, contented sigh. The best part was that there was no Muslim in sight. Everywhere her own pundit brethren, the vegetable seller a pundit, the barber a pundit, the milkman a pundit. Above everything else, there was deliverance from that fishwife. The fishwife, meaning her elder daughter-in-law, the very thought of whom gave her goose pimples. How she would pounce on her like a witch at the slightest excuse. There was a time when no one had dared to take her name in vain, but thanks to that virago, her name had been dragged in mud. Well, God had also rewarded her as she deserved. Otherwise, born of the same mother, why should the destinies of Gasha and Sabi have been so different? Look how Sabi is prospering here, and Gasha, not enough to eat even, and all because of that fishwife's deserving. No, she would not go back to Kashmir even when summer came, she was resolved. It was around 10 in the morning when Poshi Kaj came into the courtyard to sit in the sun. Half the courtyard was paved in brick, and the other half was turf. Around the turf were flower beds, potted plants decked the paved part, and flowering creepers hung from the roof of the house. Sabi was the pet name of Poshi Kaj's younger son Surendranath, who had been lodged in a nice DI-type government house in Sarojini Nagar. On the ground floor were the drawing room, bedroom, and kitchen. An open space in front of the kitchen had been converted into a dining room with a table and chairs. A toilet, bathroom, and two bedrooms were on the first floor. There was a terrace and a bar sati on top. Surendranath had gone to England on scholarship for higher studies, and it was there that he had found a job in the Indian High Commission. He had been transferred to Delhi 3 years back, posted to the Ministry of External Affairs on a post of some importance, earning around 1,000 rupees per month. He had been married before going to England, which was a matter of some regret to Poshi Kaj. Had he been unmarried before going abroad and landing this plum job, what a catch he would have been. The richest and the noblest of the land would have been begging before Poshi Kaj now, but what was written down in fate could not be undone, so she never let anyone suspect this secret sorrow of hers. Poshi Kaj sunned herself to her heart's content in the lawn, feeling the warmth seep into the sinews of her neck and back, relaxing them. It seemed that her rheumatism from Kashmir was all gone. She looked up to the sky. Its glassy blue pleased her very much. On the upper balcony she could see the washing that Koti had hung out to dry. How they shone in the bright sun. The foreign machine was certainly a boon. Koti could not have taken more than 5 minutes to finish the washing, and yet how sparklingly clean the clothes looked. Suddenly her train of thought was disrupted when she happened to see Koti's undergarments among the washing, and she blushed with embarrassment. Oh God, what must the neighbors think of such immodesty? She got up and began to pace the courtyard. On an impulse she went and plucked some flowers, gathering them in the palu of her sari. She would take Koti along and go to a temple. Perhaps the Birla Mandir. They say it was a worthwhile sight to see. It would not take them too long. Half an hour at the most. They would be back before lunch. She went in, put the flowers from her sari palu on the dining table, and sat in a chair, waiting for Koti to come downstairs. How long she takes. Must have been in the bathroom for more than an hour now. God only knows what all she rubs on that body of hers. Coming to Delhi has certainly changed her. All restraint and propriety forgotten, but still, you had to admit, she is 1,000 times better than that fishwife. After a while, she heard the bathroom door open and Koti came clattering down the stairs. She wore fresh clothes, a crisp sari, and a matching blouse. Her hair was not done yet, but still she looked better now, not floating around in a gown as she was earlier, thought Poshi Kaj. Oh no, Mataji, what have you done? The sight of the flowers on the table drew a cry from Koti. Poshi Kaj was stunned. She knew she had done something she shouldn't have. Why did you pluck these flowers from the garden, particularly these hollyhocks? There was a tinge of anger in Koti's sense of loss. Her daughter-in-law's sharp rebuke hurt like death, and all for just a few flowers. How the woman preens herself on her new sophistication. There I was just cackney, and here she has elevated me into Mataji. Mataji shit. But swallowing her fury, she said in low voice, I thought we could go to the temple. You should have told me first. There is no temple in this location, nor anywhere near. The places close are the Ashoka Hotel and Kanakapuri. What is that? Oh, you wouldn't understand. Come, let us go and sit in the sun. Poshi Kaj was stung. She seemed to be on fire from top to toe. This daughter of the notoriously stupid Govinda understands, and I wouldn't. the cheek, she needs to be put in her place, asking for it, she is, otherwise she will walk all over me. No, I must assert myself. Do you take me for a complete fool? Don't I know about the Birla Temple here, where people throng from all over the place? Birla Temple is very far away from here, farther even than Connaught Place and Gold Market. It is. Poshikaj did not believe her. It was only the other day, when she had seen something like a temple in the distant western horizon, where the sun sets, it had blue domes. She was sure in her heart that this must be the famous Birla Temple. She fumed to her daughter-in-law with a determined look, and said, "Then what temple is it that can be seen from the terrace?" "The one with those blue domes. The cleaning woman also told me that that was the Birla Temple." "What does the cleaning woman know, Mataji?" "That building is neither a temple, nor a mosque. It is the Pakistani embassy, Pakistani office, as they say." Poshikaj was revolted at this explanation from her daughter-in-law. "What a fool this woman takes me for. The brazenly, no one dares to openly mention the word Pakistan in Kashmir, even though there are only Muslims around, and she would have me believe that there is a Pakistani office in Delhi, where there are only pundits everywhere. What a cock and bull story this daughter-in-law of mine is cooking up, but who can argue with a shameless liar?" Poshikaj restrained herself, not wanting to get into a fracas with this one, and have another scene, like the ones with that fish wife. She had no strength to deal with Virago's silence was golden at such an occasion, she told herself. It was around 12 Skoti lit the gas, and made rotis. Then she warmed the vegetables which had already been done in the pressure cooker. In the morning, she laid the table, and placed two tumblers of water on it. She sliced some onions in a plate, and squeezed lemon from the fridge on them. Poshikaj saw the preparations for the meal, and said, "Don't set a place for me on the table. I am not having your lunch." "But, why, do you want to fast?" "Why should I fast? Let the plates be. Give me my roti in the small basin and I'll have it here, on the floor." Saying this, she went up to her room, and brought down the rag of a curry her bedding from Kashmir had come wrapped in. She spread it on the floor. Koti merely looked at her and brought had a dozen rotis in a small basin, the vegetables in a small bowl. Poshikaj took out a small towel from her petticoat pocket, spread it out and laid the bowl on it. The basin she held in her lap and began to eat with relish. The meal over, Koti went up to her room. She came down after about an hour, dressed up and hair done smartly. "I am going to Miss Kapoor's. I shall be back by 3 o'clock," she said. Poshikaj did not reply, but her silence made no impact on Koti. She merely looked at her watch and left. Poshikaj felt rebuffed, but she told herself not to mind. Who was she to stop her? Let her do what she will. She went back to the garden. The warmth of the sun soothed her ruffled feelings. One could give anything for this lovely winter sunshine. To tell the truth, this was the only worthwhile thing here, she thought. She pulled her sari up and began to scratch her leg. Her eye fell on her feet, and she saw the chapped skin and cracked heels. God damn the winter there, how it ruins one's hands and feet. And then she thought of Beetu and groaned, the poor wretch. His chilblains had turned into suppurating sores. How many times I warned that witch to take better care of her son, make him wear warm socks and fur shoes. I used to tell her 100 times, but would she ever listen? But then, a fur shoe does cost a pretty penny, and what is poor Gosh's salary, after all? Barely enough to make two ends meet. Come to think of it, he doesn't have an overcoat to wear. How he must shiver in the cold outside. It is all a matter of luck, nothing else, she heaved a sigh. Poshikaj looked around at the flats. All was silence, no one in sight, as if everybody was dead. Aren't neighbors supposed to interact with one another all the time? But here they might as well be living in different countries, completely oblivious of one another. But even if they did mix, how would she understand their foreign gibberish? Besides, the names of these women are equally strange. One is Mrs. Jane, another Mrs. Sunder, a third calls herself Mrs. Prakash, and still another is Mrs. Something. Just look at this Sikh woman next door. Her daughter-in-law must be my age, but still she is Khaled Mrs. Kem Singh. God knows what dhis_mrs_mean is. Well, this city may have something to it, but frankly, what does it have? She heard the rumble of a scooter and knew Sava was back. He came in and asked her, "How was your day, Ma? You okay?" "I am all right, son. May God shower prosperity on you." Sava went up to his room but came back immediately. "Where is she?" he asked Poshikaj. She said, she was going to see MRS Kapoor, which MRS Kapoor, the same who does all those things to her hair, I mean the one who is rather fair and slim, you mean Miss Kapoor, that is what I said, Saba burst into laughter, you never said that, it is Miss Kapoor, meaning Kapoor Sahib's daughter. You called her MRS Kapoor, which would make her his wife, let her go to hell for all I care, how should I know these subtleties? You will have to learn these subtleties now that you are staying here. Saba turned to go up but Poshi Kaj stopped him with, how come Koti is so close to this Kapoor woman? I do not quite approve of her ways, let me tell you, oh come on, she is all right, how does it matter? We have to watch our own interest, that is all. What is that supposed to mean? It means that her father is a big officer in all India Radio and that Koti is trying for a job there. What do you mean? Do you want your wife also to work now? Is not your big salary large enough? It is not a question of money alone. She gets so bored here. It would be a good change for her. And then, if your income increases, is there any harm in it? There are so many needs and expenses. Do you know, we have a radio. Yet no TV. We have a scooter, but no car. You are just being greedy. Saba merely laughed. His glance fell on the curry. And he asked, who spread this rag on the floor? Poshi Kaj could feel that Saba was angry. Softy, she said, I did. Why, I find it difficult to eat, seated in a chair at the table. Son, Saba said nothing. Soon after, Koti returned, and he took her aside, and the two had a brief consultation with each other. After that they had tea, then they called a cab, and taking Poshi Kaj along, went to Chandni Chowk. Here they bought a steel thali, a wooden chokhi, and a pair of chappals, of oil, chikan, sari, and a small sheath idol for her. Once home they served her food in the steel thali. That night Poshi Kaj could not sleep at all. All kinds of thoughts kept coming in her mind, leaving her restless. So they are thinking of buying a car. What luck for this daughter of Govinda the idiot. Well, you had to say that she has brought luck to our family. On the other hand, there is that wretched one, bringing nothing but misfortune to home and hearth. God knows whether Gosha bought a bicycle or not. He was saying that if available on installments, he would certainly get one. The poor fellow has worn his feet out, trudging from Rainawari to his office every day. Come to think of it, a quilt is too heavy for the weather here. God knows how cold it must be there. I will ask Saba to write to Gosha. He must not stay too late. To hell with that Jahanagar tuition work. God forbid, if anything should happen to him, we won't be worth a penny. Just think of all that abundance of things available at Chandni Chowk. How many clothes, such perfect outfits for B2. If I had been carrying my own money, I could have bought something for him. Well, if I ever go again, I will definitely get a shirt and shorts for B2, and a hockey ball. I must also get bangles for the girls next door, and that fish wife must also have a sari or something. Of course, if God should spare me, Saba will keep me in luxury. He was telling me that he would take me to Hardwar next month. How keen that departed one was to go to Hardwar, but even after death, he could only reach Shadipur. How could poor Gosha afford those 500-600 rupees for the journey all the way to Hardwar? Had Saba been here, things would have been different. So there are Muslims here too, all those Birkwalis and Chandni Chowk. Would they also be feeling the same fear here that is always there? She heard the door of Saba's room open, and someone walked on the cement floor, with rapid steps. Poshi Kaj recognized the footsteps. After a while there was the sound of the bathroom flush. Curse the woman's bowels, Poshi Kaj commented to herself. But what could you expect, after consuming gallons of that dal with rice in the evening? The roar of the flush must have woken up the whole neighborhood. Why, she should have had it broadcast from the radio. Isn't that the place where she is supposed to be working now? As the dawn broke, Poshi Kaj left her bed, went to the toilet, had a bath, and came back to her room, wrapping a blanket around herself. Seating the Shiva idol in front, she began to chant a bhajan. She knew bits of the Shiva Mahimastadra, and recited them too, her prayers over. She went up to the terrace and sat in the sun. The sky here seemed much whiter. It was not like the bounded sky of Kashmir, mountains all around and a tiny patch of sky in the middle. Perhaps it was due to this unbounded expanse of sky that people's vision also widened here. Material prosperity must uncloud molds too. One loves to have baths here. So easy to keep oneself clean and tidy. Her thoughts were interrupted by Saba's call. And she came down. The table was set with cups and saucers, bread and eggs. Saba was wearing dressing gown, reading the newspaper. Koti came in from the kitchen carrying a teapot. She was in a gown-like garment, her hair tied with something that looked like a strip of red cloth, placing the teapot on the table. She went to the fridge and brought out butter and strawberry jam, both of which she proceeded to apply to the bread. Poshikaj ate a couple of slices of bread with her tea. She other two had eggs too. Watching them, particularly Koti, eating the eggs made Poshikaj think of B2. How thin the poor thing was, yet not even a cup of milk was available for him. If that mother of his had allowed him to come with me, his health would certainly have improved in this winter's sunshine. The tea over, Saba went to his room, dumping the cups and plates in the slim for the Lila to wash. Koti followed. After some time both reappeared, spruced up, smartly dressed. Poshikaj gave them an appraising look. I am leaving for office, Ma, and she will come with me up to the market. I will help her buy the meat, said Saba, and pushed the scooter outside. He sat on it, with Koti on the pillion. She put her right hand on his shoulder. Fut, fut, fut went the scooter, speeding on the road. Would Gasha have purchased the bicycle? After all, I could have given him the 50-60 rupees I have to help him out. I could send them to him. Poshikaj was lost in these thoughts, when suddenly Miss Kapoor materialized before her. After saying Namaskar, she asked in Hindi, MRS, Ban is at home. Poshikaj understood the question and replied in her broken Hindi, Market get meat. Miss Kapoor smiled. Poshikaj did not like her smile. Indifferently, she said, sit, she come soon. But Miss Kapoor did not sit with her. She went into the drawing room instead, sat on a sofa, as if she owned the place. What does the bitch want here? Poshikaj said to herself, and shrugging four shoulders went to the lawn to sit in the sun. Koti returned with her shopping and Poshikaj told her, there is someone waiting for you inside. MRS, Kapoor, it is Mataji. Not MRS, Kapoor, it is Miss Kapoor. All right, Miss Kapoor, let it be. One speaks to her normally, and she laughs at one in return. You must have misunderstood. The poor thing is not that sort, saying this. She too went into the drawing room. Her daughter-in-law did not believe her. This hurt Poshikaj deeply, but it was her own fault, intervening without rhyme or reason. The couple think no end of the bitch. No wonder they do, considering they need a favor from her father, Miss Kapoor. Indeed, God knows how many men she must be intimate with, and she is still a miss. Poshikaj snorted to herself. Warmed by the sun, Poshikaj had began to doze when a burst of laughter from the drawing room made her sit up. They were laughing at her. She knew the mortification was worse than death. She would not stay here long. She must soon find someone to go back to Kashmir with. She could leave within the next few days. In that case, and if she could, the only thing she would carry back with her would be heaps of this winter sunshine.